T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Second hour of the show. I was letting the music roll just a little bit there because I'm assessing what direction to go in. And Kevin Killeen just donated this to the Arsenal this afternoon. No pun intended, because this is a sad story. I mean, I started with this at the beginning of the last hour, just referring back to Ferguson and Mike Brown. And you have kids being shot in this city, 8-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 15-year-olds. Time after time again, black children being executed in our city. And Kevin was just at a news conference about this. And this is Major Mary Warnicke, who his suggestion, well, I have not heard this yet, but the description sounded pretty compelling. Kevin said, "Do you have a cut of the day? This might be it. Let's check it out."
We are here today because we have a 7-year-old who will not be starting school today. We have a 10-year-old. Murdered not that long ago in the city of St. Louis, who will not be starting school today. We have a 2-year-old murdered on Ferris not so long ago. We have a 3-year-old who was murdered on Michigan not so long ago. And I know, people know who shot and murdered these children. I know for a fact people know who is responsible. And we are not getting the calls that we need. We are not getting people knocking and demanding that we arrest these people. We need people to step it up. We need the community to call us. We need the community to be knocking on these other doors saying, "Hey, who did this?" We should be having these phone calls. We have been getting some help. We have been getting some phone calls on some of these, but it's not enough. When the first thing that leads the news last night is the weather report, I'm not happy. I don't care about another storm in St. Louis. I care about who murdered this child.
So the tip number is 866-371-TIPS. We've heard this repeatedly. We saw it play itself out in Ferguson with snitches get stitches. You know, I was reading from some of the DOJ report, the Eric Holder FBI report from the Mike Brown situation, and repeatedly, witness after witness, there were several witnesses that refused to go before the grand jury. There were several that said, "Look, I'll tell you what I know, but you're not identifying me. And if you ever come back to me and ask me this again, I'm going to say I lied, because it's too risky." So I do understand that people, it's a different culture overall, and there are people that are worried about their safety. On the other hand, there are kids that are being picked off in this city every day, and you're telling me you can't cooperate with the cops to get the shooters and the murderers of these children? Where's the sanity in that? And I guess that it's just an issue that I can't relate with, because I've said this before. If this happens in Fenton, where I live, or High Ridge, or Chesterfield, or Baldwin, are you kidding me? Every single person in every neighborhood would come out and do everything they possibly can to make sure that the police caught the killers. Now, obviously, a little different situation if you're in fear of your own life, or you're worried about retaliation. But maybe just a little courage is warranted here, because these are young children who, as the major pointed out, are not starting school. So we segue from our sadness here in St. Louis to the mass shooting in Dayton, where there was an update in the last hour. Police say the gunman's sister was among the first people he shot. But you know what's interesting? I'm going to start with this soundbite here, because they're not exactly sure whether or not he intentionally killed her. So here's the discussion on that. This is Dayton Police Chief Richard Beal, just a few minutes ago, actually.
The evidence has been debated in both directions. With individuals in our organization intimately familiar with the evidence, arguing both directions. And if we, based on what we know now, which is the key factor here, if we can't seem to make that call conclusively, that we're divided about how whether that was intentional or not, I think it's inconclusive. We may get a better insight through historical data looking back, but based on the evidence from that night, I don't think we can make the call.
Yeah, again, that's Chief Richard Beal, and they just don't know if he intended to kill the sister. I'm not sure that's completely important to find out considering everything else here. So what they know is that he was familiar with the area of the shooting, the district, its night spots. He'd been there the night before. It's apparent that he had a plan for the mass shooting. Why he chose that place at that time still being investigated. So a little bit more here from this news conference. This is Richard Beal.
We were able to confirm the arrival of those three individuals in the vehicle that was parked behind in the Thai 9 parking lots. You know where that's at, I assume, most of you. And that was 11:04 because there was a parking ticket that had that time stamped on it. So we were able to confirm the time of arrival. We know immediately upon arrival, all three headed to a Blind Bob's and remained there until 12:13 a.m. when the assailant, in fact, left, went across the street to Ned Pepper's, where he remained until 12:42 a.m. He then goes back to the parking lot and then spends, this is back to Thai 9 where the vehicle's at, and he spends the next 8 minutes gathering a content out of the trunk of that vehicle, in which he has also now changed attire. He has a very heavy backpack that he is carrying. He then goes to the rear behind Newcomb's and the Hart Mercantile location, and he is there for about 9 minutes. And it's at that point there's physical evidence. Not only is there video evidence, there's physical evidence to confirm that he was at that location, and we'll give you that detail in this presentation. And then at the 1:04 a.m., he emerges behind the alley, and that's when the shooting begins.
All right, so this is all from a news conference that took place a little bit earlier, actually just within the last half hour, 45 minutes. Now, he did visit a second bar right before the shooting.
The next blue line is when the assailant leaves Blind Bob's, goes across the street to Ned Pepper's, where he's there for roughly a half an hour, and then goes east on 5th Street, down Jackson Street, and then west back through the alley where he had originally come the first time, but then turned to go up toward Blind Bob's.
Some of the things that are amazing here is how long this, you know, basically took place. Actually, I might have, let me see if I can play this one sound by two. I might have indicated the intro for that one that wasn't accurate. This is Lieutenant Paul Saunders.
And now he, at 12:14, so a minute later, this is the shooter entering Ned Pepper's. He goes into Ned Pepper's. He's there for about 30 minutes. Ned Pepper's was very crowded, shoulder to shoulder. And then he leaves at 12:42. That's a key time also. Remember the 12:42 time, because we're getting closer to the point of when the shooting began.
Yeah, listen to the length of the shooting overall.
We believe that the shooting started at approximately 1:05 and 35 seconds. We believe it ended at 1:06 and 7 seconds. That's 32 seconds. Depending on which video you're looking at, our first engagement was about halfway through that.
So basically you're saying about 20 seconds into this thing, and he only spent 30 seconds shooting. And then officer shot and killed him. So he was engaged very, very quickly. There was this other guy that was in the news today that you might have heard about, Ethan Colley, who's accused of lying on firearms forms because he bought the pistol that was not used in the shooting. And they also say that he bought the armor and the 100-round magazine for bets. They don't think he knew what he planned, but it doesn't really matter. He's still charged because of the things that he did. But did he have an accomplice?
Well, I think it was really important, you know, were there co-conspirators? Were there some other folks aiding and abetting? We're not saying that this is the finality of that conversation, but clearly that day, during that time frame, we don't see anyone assisting him in committing this horrendous crime. So that's important information.
All right, so there you go. That's from the news conference that occurred a little bit earlier in Dayton this afternoon. We'll take a break. There was a very interesting piece that I saw, and this is not new. This is a discussion that's taking place, I think, in bars and locker rooms and just conversations everywhere. And that's not just with men, but the pace of sports. There was an incident over the weekend at a PGA event, the Northern Trust Open, with Bryson DeChambeau and how long he took at a putt. But it's baseball games, it's football games. Chris Raby coming in to talk about some challenges for major sporting events in just a couple of minutes here on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Well, I don't think this is anything new, but I invited Chris. It is a sick riff, isn't it? I can't remember who that is. Do you know who that is? It's my bumper music. How are you, Raby? I was trying to do the intro here, and you didn't let me. We've talked about this before, just the time, the pace of play in baseball. That's a big issue. Obviously, they talk about it all the time in Major League Baseball. But, Chris, I saw this article, Wall Street Journal this morning. Jason Gay wrote this about sports having a big-time problem when it comes to the length of games. And this came up, and I'm sure you followed this with Bryson DeChambeau over the weekend. There was a video that was posted from a putt that he was making, I think on Friday, at the Northern Trust Open. And he took 2.5 minutes to line up this putt.
Yeah, it was like an 8-foot putt.
Yeah, and he missed it. Yeah, he missed the putt.
Dead so pushed it.
But it would be one thing if it was like a one-off thing with Bryson DeChambeau. But he's one of these guys on the tour.
Did you see what happened the next day?
No.
He had a 70-yard shot. And this was after this video went viral, and a bunch of PGA players commented on it and like kind of killed him.
Ripped him a little bit, right.
Then on Saturday, he had a 70-yard shot short of the green in the rough, and pretty straightforward shot. He paced the entire shot off. He walked all 70 yards up to the green, looked around in the green, then walked all 70 yards back before he hit the shot. It took like 3 minutes to hit.
So his defense is, he says, look, I may take a while to set up these shots, but what you don't see is that I'm walking very briskly from hole to hole. And when I tee off, I get down there right away and that it sort of evens up. But he does not have the support of all the other players. The bottom line is, and maybe this isn't as apparent in golf because we're used to golf tournaments taking a fair amount of time, and you and I both play golf. I mean, I don't play it well, and it's a 4-hour commitment, probably even more so. If you play one of these outings, Chris, as you know, it's 5 hours. The point of this piece was there's some major challenges with people when it comes to having time to watch a lot of these events or even participate in them. And I think I would use college football as a prime example because not only the regular season games, which take maybe 3.5 hours, you get to bowl time, they go to 4 to 5 hours.
SEC games take 4.5 hours, and it's brutal. It's honestly the reason that I don't enjoy going to a college football game as much as other sporting events or as much as I used to, especially like at Mizzou games. It can be 90 degrees and there's a timeout after every two plays. All right, so
here's what this guy says:
score, kick, extra point, timeout, kickoff, timeout, three plays, punt, timeout. And those are all TV timeouts. It's brutal.
This guy says this. Oh, I like it. He says, college football games drag on longer than, well, college. If it runs into overtime, you can tack on a couple of years of graduate school and a medical degree. Nick Saban grows a long, shaggy beard by the end of the average Alabama game. And then when it comes to...
And that's partly the rules, too, because they stop the clock after first downs. And
see, I hate that. That's one thing about college football I don't like.
There's just so many TV timeouts because there's so many commercials because it's such a hot commodity.
On baseball, he says, have you been to a baseball game recently? You can fly in a hot air balloon from Chicago to San Diego, then take a covered wagon back across the Rockies in the time it takes to play the average baseball game. I'm serious. My neighbor took his 4-year-old to a doubleheader this summer. By the time they got home, the kid was 6.
Well, that's the problem. You don't take your 4-year-old to doubleheader.
Well, that's probably true. That's a good point.
Here's the thing with baseball. Like, at least there's stuff going on, and I understand that pitchers will step off and guys will step out of the box and there will be pitching changes, but there's only commercial breaks, you know, every half inning, unlike a football game or unlike the end of an NBA game or a college basketball game when, you know, a team is just going to foul, free throws, timeout, foul, free throws, timeout, foul. Those are actually rules. Like baseball, they don't enforce what they have set out to accomplish in terms of pace of play, but if I'm at a baseball game, I'm never like, oh my gosh. The most people I hear complaining like that are generally in the press box. And I think that there are certain players that cause the game to take a long time. And baseball doesn't police that. They don't police it. Golf doesn't police Bryson DeChambeau taking 2.5 minutes to line up an 8-foot putt. So I think it's on the sports to police it. I do think in some cases there could be rule changes or TV timeout adjustments. Basketball has tweaked and has used a couple of different ideas at some different levels. And in the D-League and in some instances in Summer League, the NBA has addressed the end of games. And there is a system.
You mean with the number of timeouts and everything?
No, there's a system called the Elam Ending. And it's named after this guy, something Elam, who created this. And at the first media timeout under 4 minutes, because there's always a TV timeout, you know, in the NBA under 10, under 8, and under 4. At the first TV timeout under 4 minutes, the score goes away. Or I'm sorry, the clock goes away. And instead, whichever team is leading, the new target score, you add 7 points to the team that's leading's total score. So if the Bulls are beating the Rockets 90-88.
Because you're losing me here a little
bit. The Bulls are beating the Rockets 90-88.
Okay.
The first whistle under 4 minutes, the target score becomes 97 because you add 7 to the team that's leading. So the Bulls are up 90-88. The target score is 97 and the clock goes away so that teams aren't fouling for the last 3 minutes to extend the game. And instead, there's an emphasis on the team that's losing trying to play defense and get stops and make buckets.
You've completely lost me on how you end the game then.
The first team to 97.
Oh, the first team. I see what you mean.
That's the target score.
Got it.
So the first team to get to 7 points.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And they found that it's cut down on the time. Teams that are losing are coming back and winning more often. And you're not fouling timeout, fouling timeout, fouling timeout. The end of an NBA game, the last 2 minutes can take 15 minutes.
Yeah, no, more than that.
So I like the innovation, and you've got to police yourself if you're the PGA or if you're Major League Baseball.
You don't think baseball fans, and you're in a bubble, I think, in the press box. Look, we love our baseball here, but I know a lot of fans, and I was at the game on Friday night, that still think, as much fun as you have at baseball, and let's be honest, we're all talking and it's a social atmosphere as well, that these games drag on too long.
Well, if it's a great game, though, and it's all action, I don't think you mind. The thing that I think annoys people is the pitcher stepping off the rubber 3 times or the batter stepping out of the box and adjusting their batting gloves and their wristbands between every single pitch. That's what takes a long time.
Well, the pitching changes, which I guess are going to be addressed.
They're working to limit, and they've addressed the mound visits, but I think it's individual players that drag the game that take a long time. I think that if it's a great game and it's 3 hours, 15 minutes, you're not complaining because it's a great game. But if it's...
Generally, I think you're right about that.
If the ball's not in play and it's, you know, nothing happening, then I think you have issues.
You know, I think part of this goes with our lifestyle. We have a faster lifestyle. It's tough to hold people's attention, even when it comes to playing golf. You know, I said for years... And I was a cyclist, as you know, Chris, and I sort of retired or semi-retired from golf because you can't do both. Or at least I couldn't do both. I wish I could spend 3-4 hours on the bike. Obviously, you don't have to do that, but the way that I was riding, the miles I was logging was 3 to 4 hours on the bike.
Yeah.
My point is, if you're on the golf course, your round is taking 4. That doesn't account for the time that you go, you know, your drive time, if you're going to go to the range. That's a commitment for people.
And when I'm playing golf, and I generally play with the same group of guys, and everyone kind of knows the program, and everyone plays pretty quick. I don't care how good you are. Like, you and me, for instance, play pretty quick, right? Like, when we've played. But if there's people in front of you, and you're waiting on them, or if there's someone in your group, and you're waiting on them, they're usually looking at their phone, and it's their turn to hit, or... they should be getting ready to hit, and they're looking at their phone, or they're doing something else. Or how about the guy that's standing on the green, and you're like a 28 handicap, and waits for everyone else to putt, and then spends the minute doing the Tiger and walking around to the other side of the putt. And I think, honestly, this is a little thing. I think the rule leaving the flag
stick in, I think it's huge.
I think it's great. Right. I think it helps. And I think it helps from a putting standpoint. It helps me from an aiming standpoint. And B, it helps.
I like
you
to keep it in.
Tend the flag, walk in, take the flag out, put the flag back in. And if you save even 30 seconds or 45 seconds a hole over the course of a round of golf, that could be 15 minutes.
You know, the thing that we can get into a whole range of little complaints about etiquette on the golf course, but like I was behind some guys at Aberdeen the other day who were hitting from the tips and had no business hitting from the tips.
It's another problem.
They're not even down the fairway as far as I can hit, or people hitting from the blues,
and
they're looking for their balls.
I
don't know.
What's the appeal of that?
It's an ego thing, I guess.
Of hitting from the wrong tees, having a miserable time, and then you're not good enough. So A, you're not putting the ball in the fairway, or B, you're not finding the ball. I played at Medina when I was home last month, where they're having the BMW Championship this weekend. And I played
beautiful course.
Number three. Yeah, they've had the Ryder Cup there, a couple of PGA
championships. I was there for PGA a few years ago. Yeah.
And my buddy, that is one of the guys who runs the tournament, had us play from like 7,200 yards, almost where the pros are going to play for.
Brutal.
It's not fun. No. I hit the best drive of my life, and I've got 190 into a par four.
Right.
So play from the up tees, leave the pin in, and we'll all have more fun.
But 190...
Otherwise, Rudin's going to hit into you.
Yeah, 190 on a par four for you, that's a gap wedge, right?
Yeah, I wish.
Ravi's like back.
480, 490 par fours. I can't do that. That's a different sport, those pros.
No, when I play, I'm very realistic. I have no problems playing from the white tees.
You're not taking out your Bryson DeChambeau protractor and
not
calculating
doing that.
He calculates wind resistance and like...
He's a very scientific player.
Oh, yeah,
I get that.
Nerd.
But I don't think he's the only guy out there that's creating problems. There's no doubt about that. All right, Chris is back with sports. Are you going to the ballpark? No, we're in Kansas City. So you're here probably with me. Or are you going to Ballpark Village? Make a choice.
Not even mention it, to be determined.
I'm going to a screening tonight of the movie Good Boys. I don't know if you've seen the trailer. I actually coincidentally got an email from a listener today saying that she had seen the trailer while seeing another movie. It's these foul-mouthed, like, sixth-grade boys. And it's an R-rated, hard R. I think Seth Rogen is behind this, and that did not sit well with the email that I got today, or the person who emailed. So I will report. I always withhold judgment, and I'm a fan of profanity. My producers know this. Very fond of it. Especially on the golf course. But I get that it's probably not the wisest thing to have a movie or maybe encourage, you know, young kids to use language like that. But I do withhold judgment until I see the film and I'll see the screening tonight. We'll have reviews on Friday here on KMOX and on Channel 4. Great Day St. Louis. I love this story that was in the Riverfront Times yesterday about a dumb pair of criminals. And Martin Casas is with me. He's a comic book store owner. He's the guy who was the victim of this crime. He'll share the magical 24 hours with you this afternoon. Hey, Martin, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Before we get to the comic book stuff, I thought it was interesting in the RFT story, they point out that you've been a victim of crime before. I mean, I think a lot of us have. I certainly was when I lived in the city of St. Louis. But your Dodge Caravan was stolen four different times?
That's right. Yeah, no one tells you how easy those cars are to steal when you buy them.
I had a friend that lived in the city, one of my good buddies, and I'm going to not tell the story accurately, but I'm pretty sure, and it was a model that was, you know, broke into a lot and stolen a lot, and he had a similar thing happen. I think his car was stolen three times and recovered each time, right?
Yeah, yeah. My summer of 2012, my car was stolen four times, and it was returned to me four times. The last time the guy took it when I was like 10 minutes inside the house, took the car, it was gone, and then we found it 2 days later down by Cromlett Park. I guess the guy just needed to ride down to his girlfriend's house, but fortunate for me.
All right, so this story, let's kind of talk about your history a little bit. You're a comic book guy, right?
Yeah, I've been collecting comics since I was, about 12 or 13, started off with The Death of Superman in 1992, and I've been collecting comics ever since.
Just for a point of clarification here this afternoon, you kissed a girl at what age, Martin?
16, man.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I just had to confirm that. Okay, so you have a bunch of these comics then in a storage unit, right? Which, by the way, that's one of my big regrets, that I didn't, at some point in my life, invest in these stupid storage units that are everywhere and probably are cash cows. But that's another story. So you have how many comic books in that storage unit?
So we had 10 boxes, which was 3,000 comics total. We're having our house remodeled, so I needed some place to store a bunch of items, and the comics were one of them. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, every day that went by and I knew my comics were in there, I was like, man, something's going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to water. Someone's could, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Sure enough, something did.
All right, so you discovered that something did how?
So my daughter and I were out for a daddy-daughter day last Saturday, and we were heading to lunch. I got a phone call from the public storage manager. She asks, when was the last time I've been to the unit? And I was like, well, when I moved the stuff in. And she's like, I was afraid you're going to say that, that your lock's been broken off, and you better come by and see if anything's been stolen. So in my head, I'm thinking, well, there's only one thing anybody could steal in there, and those would be my comics, because everything else is just kind of like random, like family, you know, junk stuff. And so I went down there, and sure enough, I opened the door, and all my comics were gone. Now, I had my 9-year-old daughter with me, and I'm trying to, like, maintain as best composure as possible.
Right.
some just kind of like seething underneath it all. And went and talked to the manager, and she told me that she put a call in with the police, and they filed a police report. And then we just went to Climb So Ill and did some rock climbing. We rode our bikes, and I just kind of tried to do everything I could to not think about the fact that these books that I had been collecting since I was 13 are now gone. I have a good record of getting my stuff back, but everything I had is like has serial numbers, has, you know, licenses. But this was like 3,000 pieces of paper. And, you know, I'm, as a comic book store owner, people bring in their collections all the time, and they try to sell them to us. And some of them I've been able to think like, yeah, these are probably stolen. And I knew that what was probably going to happen was that somebody would try to sell the comics back. Now, I didn't think that it would be so soon, but I called my staff and I told them, if anybody wants to sell us comics, tell them we're going to buy them and just bring them into the store and I'll take a look at them. And I was like, well, there's no way it's going to be that easy, but we'll give it a shot and just in case. So the week went on, and then Thursday came by, and one of my staffers goes, hey, someone brought in a small white box of comics. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way this is that easy. So I walk in the store and I look at the box. I'm like, well, that was pretty easy. That was really easy, because there it was. There was my box of Captain America comics.
How did you know? How did you know it was yours right away?
So first of all, I wrote on the front Cap, and it had my daughter wrote that. So it was that. And then also there was notes on the side of what comics are in that box, which is what I've done with every box. There was also specific issues that I knew were in that box that nobody else could possibly have. And so when I went through it, I found the comics, and I was like, oh, that's it. And so then I was like, but then I was in the store and I had all these customers in there. So again, I had to be as cool as possible, right? Because I'm just kind of like freaking out now inside. And, but you know, I called the cops and the third district burglary division. And, they told me exactly what to do. So I called the lady back, and, we have a policy of if you leave us your comics, we have to value them. And so you need to leave your name and phone number with us. So she left her name and phone number with us. And I then called her back, and I was like, oh my God, this is a great collection of comics. Like, I've never seen a box of books like this. Like, this is like hundreds of dollars worth of comics right here. How much do you want for them? And she was like, oh my God, that's great news. Can I come by tomorrow and we can like talk about it? I'm like, oh, absolutely. I would love to see it. What time can you come by? Can you come by at 10 a.m.? She's like, yes. I'm like, great. Looking forward to it. I'll make sure I have a lot of money here for you to get. And I'm just, because I was really hamming it up. They really wanted to come back. And then I called the cops back, and the cops came to the store, and they waited for her. And waited for her to show up.
And she did not show up at 10 a.m., right? She delayed that a little bit?
She did. She said her car broke down, and she needed someone to pick her up. So at this point, the police were like stationed inside the shop waiting to come get her. And we were kind of thinking that she had like caught on somehow. Like, you know, maybe I was hammering it up too much. I don't know.
So when the police find, well, you know that you have the person there, and then they come out of their hiding spots and they pop her at that point, right?
Yeah. So what happened is that, and I told her to call me, give me a heads up of when she's going to come back. And because I wanted to make sure I was there. And then she said, okay, fine. So she called me at like 1:30, said she'd be there at 2:00, and she was coming in from Chesterfield. So I said, cool. So I called the cops, said she's going to be here. Police officers came over, kind of one of them staked out inside I gave them a bunch of comics and turned on the TV and let them, watch like, you know, a movie or whatever, just kind of pretend to be a customer. And then sure enough, 2:00 hits, door opens. And, you know, the thing about this is I had to pretend like I didn't know who she was, but I had been obsessively looking at her Facebook page the last 24 hours because, you know, I gave her name to the police officers. You know, they looked her up on Facebook, and she's like selling things that she'd been, her and her boyfriend are selling things that she had been stealing. And they post it on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, like Louis Vuitton handbags and an antique cash register and used Jordans, all these things that they were selling up there.
Very weird collection of stuff that you're selling online that only if you would have all that stuff if you were stealing it from somebody else. So So the police officers knew, like, that's this person's stolen item, that this person stole an item. So they knew they had her. when she came in, I pretended I didn't know who she was. She identified herself. The police officers kind of like alerted each other that they were there. And then the next thing you know, I'm like, all right, well, let me get you your books. Let's look at the books, which is kind of like a code for the police officers. And then, a police officer came out of the, you know, guns drawn, came out of the basement and was like, you know, hands up, you're under arrest. And then I just kind of like was like Ricky Bobby, like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like, what do I do now? I just kind of like sat in the store and just kind of waited for the whole thing to play out, because at that point my job was done, right? Like, we brought her in and now it was the police officer's job from there. But we had a couple customers come in and they were like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, hey, can you come back later? I think this is a sting operation. Yeah. I'm not really sure what's going on.
Well, I I'm really running short on time, so I have about 30 seconds. But what was her reaction when that happened?
Oh, I didn't do it. It's not me. I didn't. Okay. You're thinking about somebody else. But then eventually they got her down because they questioned her. And then her boyfriend confessed everything.
And you got everything back, right?
Everything back, yeah. Happy comic book store owner.
You got a good streak going with stolen merchandise. I don't know if everyone can say the same. Martin, thank you. It's a crazy story, and I'm glad everything turned out all right.
Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. That's Martin Casas, who shared his stupid criminal story for us here this afternoon.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, it's an epidemic here in St. Louis, and it's not white police officers shooting unarmed black boys or men. It's kids being shot by, unfortunately, members of their own community. And the latest is Xavier Usanga, who's 7 years old, shot yesterday in the 3500 block of North 14th Street. By the way, there was an 18-year-old who was shot as well, but survived. And today, this is our audio cut of the day. Sponsored by the Good Feet Store, supporting St. Louis Arches for 16 years now, Major Mary Warnicki with the St. Louis Police Department, with her plea to stop the madness.
We are here today because we have a 7-year-old who will not be starting school today. We have a 10-year-old murdered not that long ago in the city of St. Louis who will not be starting school today. We have a 2-year-old murdered on Ferris not so long ago. We have a 3-year-old who was murdered on Michigan not so long ago. And I know, people know, who shot and murdered these children. I know for a fact people know who is responsible. And we are not getting the calls that we need. We are not getting people knocking and demanding that we arrest these people. We need people to step it up. We need the community to call us. We need the community to be knocking on these other doors saying, hey, who did this? We should be having these phone calls. We have been getting some help. We have been getting some phone calls on some of these, but it's not enough. When the first thing that leads the news last night is the weather report, I'm not happy. I don't care about another storm in St. Louis. I care about who murdered this child.
That is Major Mary Warnicki with a call to action this afternoon. Crime Stoppers tip line 866-371-TIPS. That's your audio cut of the day.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.